Good afternoon. I'd like to call to order the October work session of the Commonwealth Transportation Board. Welcome our guests. We will begin tomorrow's business session with public comments. This afternoon's session is a work session, and so we're going to dive right into the business agenda. For the benefit of those who are here to listen to the presentation on transportation revenues and the budget, we're going to take up a couple of smaller items first, and at 2:30 we will take up the revenue issues, if that's acceptable to folks. Any questions with that? If not, I'd like to call the first item, which is the Model Public Participation Guidelines, with Mr. Walton. Welcome, Mr. Walton.
Good afternoon, Secretary Ward. I can find Ms. Carol. Where is it? I have a very short presentation today and tomorrow on your action agenda item. There is a resolution asking that you approve a proposed model public participation guidelines.
Mr. Donahue.
There we go.
All right.
As a little bit of background, the Virginia Administrative Process Act requires state agencies to develop public participation guidelines for the purpose of soliciting input of interested parties in the formation of regulations. In 2008, the General Assembly passed actually two bills that were signed by the governor. They're identical pieces of legislation, which required the Department of Planning and Budget, in consultation with the Office of the Attorney General, to develop model participation guidelines to be adopted by state agencies, boards, and commissions. The legislation afforded state agencies two alternatives. They could adopt the model provided by the Attorney General and DPB as an APA-exempt action, or if they wanted to make significant changes to the model that was developed, they could adopt a modified version on a fast-track action approach. The purpose of these model public participation guidelines is prior to the amendment in 2008, the Code of Virginia does not provide detailed information on the scope or content of an agency's public participation guidelines. Therefore, agencies were all over the board on what was required, the type of notices they gave, the time frames for making public comment. So the legislative mandate standardizes the procedures used by state agencies in the development of APA guidelines. Some of the key features and ones to be aware of, they're only applicable to regulations. These public participation guidelines are not applicable to the public participation requirements nor the procedures that the board uses for construction and maintenance projects. Currently, VDOT has 16 regulations which are subject to the APA, and give you several examples there. The Department of Rail and Public Transportation currently has no regulations subject to the APA. However, in the future, they may be authorized to adopt such regulations, so we're asking for you to approve theirs as well tomorrow. The models provide a detailed process for identifying persons interested in a given regulatory matter, and a requirement that the agency maintain a notification list for each regulatory action. The guidelines address the use of current technologies which were not available a number of years ago when public petition guidelines were adopted, such as email, the DPB regulatory town hall. It also formalizes an agency's use of several ad hoc committees, one known as the Regulatory Advisory Panel, which may be created by the agency to provide expertise and technical assistance on a particular regulation. It also provides for negotiated rulemaking panels. Again, these are created for controversial regulations and to reach a consensus among the various interested parties, and it also provides for the assistance of a facilitator or a mediator. Under tab 10 in your action agenda item, for tomorrow, you will find a two-page document which sets forth other significant differences between the existing public participation guidelines and these proposed new guidelines. The anticipated benefits of the new guidelines would be, one, provide consistency among state agencies regarding the process that all state agencies will use. Presents the public with a comprehensive view of the agency's public participation process from petitions for rulemaking through the adoption of final regulation. It encourages citizen involvement through these specialized panels, stakeholder panels, which I mentioned previously, and it promotes public participation through a wide variety of electronic communication means. As far as our deadlines, the two pieces of legislation adopted by the General Assembly require all agencies to adopt new guidelines to repeal their current ones by December 1 of this year. If the new ones are not in effect on January 1st, the agencies cannot move forward with new regulations. To be effective within that time frame, we need to have the board's approval at this meeting so we can submit it to the Virginia Register by November 5th, 2008. And once again, it is under tab 10 for your action agenda item tomorrow, and I'll be happy to answer any questions you have.
Questions to Mr. Walton?
Who gets to appoint the regulatory advisory panels or the negotiated rulemaking panels?
The agency would appoint them, depending the CTB. It's a matter of submitting names to those for those individuals to be appointed. If it's VDOT, VDOT would make the appointments.
Okay, any additional questions? Thank you, Mr. Walton, and there is an action item, as you have indicated, tomorrow morning. The next item on the agenda, item two, are the access management regulations on minor arterials, collectors, and local streets. Connie Sorrell, Chief of Operations, will be here to present very quickly. Connie, before you arrive, we're going to be suspending right at 2:30 to move on to the revenue issues. Welcome, Ms. Sorrell.
As many of you, I do believe, know, the General Assembly in January 2007 directed the department to implement an access management program. So we're going to just update you with where we are in the regulatory process. And if you have any questions, we're happy to answer them. There's no board action related to this immediately. It's more just an informational update. So I think most of you are familiar with what access management is about, regulating, setting standards for spacing on our highways and to try and make sure that the principal arterials and other major collector types of roads are as free-flowing as possible and that we have a balance between access to a local community as well as access through a community. So, the access management principles are based on the functional classifications for highways in terms of access to property and through mobility. So just as a brief overview. And this is a very complicated slide to really to represent a fairly simple idea, and that is if you have a new road that you're building and you have access management principles that you implement at the beginning of that road, actually, you can have that road function at a very high level, almost to the point of it four-lane road functioning as if it were a six-lane road. So one of the challenges we have is for the many roads we've already built to manage the access that we have for those roads today as well as into the future for what projects we'll have, making sure that we continue to implement access management principles to preserve the capacity carrying of the capability of these major roads. So with that, I want to ask Rob Hoffrichter, who is the Assistant Division Administrator for Maintenance and is really responsible for this access management program and our secondary subdivision requirements and other issues of that nature, to give you the rest of the briefing related to what we're doing. Thank you.
Welcome, Mr. Hoffrichter.
Hello. Make sure I get the right controls here. All right. As Connie mentioned, in 2007, the General Assembly directed us to develop regulations and standards. That was done, completed December 31st of that year, which, as some of you may know, is a very accelerated process for regulations and standards. In 2008, the General Assembly came back and said, wait a minute, we'd like to implement it in phases. Phase one is the principal arterials, and phase two is all the other roads that VDOT controls. And for phase two, that would take effect October 1st of 2009. For phase one, we began under that July 1st of this year. We've got a website that has information on it. We held 9 meetings, one in each construction district. We had over 600 people external to VDOT attend those sessions. So we've gotten the word out. Things are moving along fairly well with regards to that. When we say principal arterial, most people think of federal functional classification of principal arterial. But the commissioner has also added 630 miles of minor arterials to that classification for the purposes of access management only. And those are segments of roads that fill in gaps or provide service in regionally significant corridors. For phase two, which is where we're at right now, we're working on minor arterials, collectors, and local streets. Arterials are looking at through traffic, collectors are looking at sort of a balance between through movement and access to properties, and local streets are, of course, emphasizing access to land adjacent to those streets. Going through the Administrative Process Act to get these implemented, we've been through all the permissions required to get them out to public comment, and they have been published by the registrar October 31st. We're going to hold 4 public hearings across the state. And by December, public comment period will close. We'll review what's come in, make adjustments to the regulations, come back to you for another informational presentation as well. In addition, before these come into effect, we are going to need the board to take some action, and that will be to repeal the minimum standards of entrance to state highways, which this new regulation will replace. When we're talking about functional classification, got a map up there showing a portion of Hanover County, which shows the different classifications. Right now, the existing items hit only the principal arterials and that portion of Route 301 up there that's listed as a minor arterial. The rest of these regulations are going to hit all of those roads. As part of those regulations and the standards that go along with them, they're looking at spacing standards. They are different depending on what kind of road you're on in terms of both the speed and whether it's urban or rural, and what its functional classification is. The lowest standards, of course, are for local streets, where the spacing standard is 50 feet. Now, just because those standards are listed doesn't mean that you can't vary from those. For older established corridors where you can't get any kind of spacing because you already have entrances that exist, and that you have exceptions to those standards. In addition, if you're in a corridor that has a VDOT-approved access management plan, we understand that some localities want things to look a little bit different. As long as they have a plan that makes the roadway work, you can approve those and you can follow those spacing standards. And then if you're in a new traditional neighborhood design type neighborhood development, once again, we can adjust the standards. As long as the roads work, we're happy. Any questions?
Any questions, Mr. Hoffrichter? And again, the calendar for this is to bring forward the public comments and action by the Commonwealth Transportation Board. Are these VDOT regulations?
These are VDOT regulations, but the legislation makes them up to the commissioner, not the board.
Okay. And what is the calendar for that?
They would be in place by October 1st, 2009.
So there'll be plenty of opportunities for the board to ask questions, and we will obviously be getting additional presentations as these regulations get closer to completion.
Yes, sir.
Questions, Mr. Hoffrichter or Ms. Sorrell? Okay. Thank you very much. How are we doing on time? We're going to try and squeeze in 2 additional presentations. For industrial rail access, we have 5 more minutes. These are both industrial access project briefings. And I'm confident that Mr. Page can accomplish both of these in record time.
I promise to put it into Spencer on time, Mr. Chairman. railroad tech there. We have two rail industrial access project briefings today, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. The first one is Bleach Tech LLC, which is located in the Petersburg Industrial Park. This industrial park, by the way, is a rail and highway-served industrial park, and all four parties that are in the park today as industrial developments have rail service funded through the rail access program. Bleach Tech is a bleaching solutions chemical-based operation that's growing its regional market in the area. They want to construct through their application 1,265 feet of track to serve their facility at the Petersburg Industrial Park. The rail project cost will be $300,000, and will connect to CSX Transportation at Collier Yard. The Bleach Tech facility alone, as you know, rail access is an economic development program. We'll see $20 million in local investment in the Petersburg area, as well as 26 new jobs will be created by 2010 in an area that exceeds the normal average overall statewide unemployment rate, typically. Rail access will enable more than 200 rail car shipments per year upon completion, and that equates to about 700 trucks per year removed off of Virginia's highways. The board may be familiar about the rail access program application procedures and scoring criteria. They have been provided in this presentation, Mr. Chairman and members of the board, for you to reflect back on. The consequence of time, I won't go through these. But this project did score in a recommended area of fair, which is 64 out of 100 points. For recommendation for project funding at your November meeting for consideration, Bleach Tech's application will come forward in a resolution for $300,000 and no local match for the Bleach Tech operation as we move forward. In consideration of that, we have also been sharing with the CTV that we'd be transparent and understanding with the board our contracting process for rail industrial access. Also in this presentation, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, we've put in the contracting, basically the framework of what we do in rail access agreements so that you all may reflect on this, and if you have any questions at a later time, I'll be glad to address that as well or before next month's meeting. That concludes the Bleach Tech presentation, Mr. Chairman. I can go forward to Kalanzi if you'd like. Thank you. And let's see if I can get out of this.
While Mr. Page is doing that, are there any questions on the Bleach Tech presentation? And that will be an action item when?
November meeting, sir. Thank you very much. Kalanzi LLC is located in Nottoway County. This, again, is a nice operation for a rural setting. Kalanzi is a marble and granite precious stone polishing and remanufacturing corporation that granite countertops and marble countertops are becoming more popular as we see in building practices. Kalanzi will be constructing 500 feet of track that will be served from the Heartland Quarter Line near Fort Pickett in Nottoway County. The overall rail project cost is $150,000. Service will be provided by Norfolk Southern out of its crew yard. The Kalanzi facility isn't expanding, which means it's growing in Nottoway County. This project will generate $3 million in local investment over the next 21 months and also create 10 new jobs for Nottoway County as well by July of 2010. We're looking at 250 rail cars a year once it's up and running, which equates to about 875 truckloads off of Virginia's highways. Project scoring, again, Mr. Chairman, as I mentioned earlier. Recommended project funding, Kalanzi has offered as well to match the grant. Although it is eligible for a funding of a different level, it has come forward with a voluntary match of $65,000 with a CTB November action item of $85,000 as we move forward for the November meeting. Again, the contracting processes are available on this presentation and also for the board to inquire about later if necessary. Mr. Chairman, turn the floor back over to you in consequence of time to try to get through this as quickly as possible.
Ms. Page, you got a future, the guy that does the fine print at the end of the ads on the radio. Thank you. Any questions?
Chairman.
Mr. Witt.
The last one, you ranked a 54, and you said there was no match there. This one seems to be ranked slightly higher at 60, and there is a match. What is our policy in determining that? And you call the second one voluntary.
Right. Yes, sir. Under the Rail Industrial Access Sidetracks Program and policies and procedures adopted by the board, the first $300,000 of an eligible project is at no match, and over that it's dollar for dollar up to $150 additional $1,000.
So
very similar to the road
policy
program. Okay. So many times over, we do have industries or localities that like to show that there is a public-private partnership initiative, and then Kalanzi realizes that as well and has come forward with that match opportunity.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wade.
Additional questions? If not, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Our next item on the agenda, beginning at 2:30, is a presentation by Secretary Homer on transportation revenues and budget. Welcome, Mr. Secretary.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. This is the first of three presentations today about transportation revenues and the budget. As we've witnessed so dramatically over the last several weeks, the world and the economy have changed very, very dramatically, and the transportation world needs to catch up. This presentation that I'm doing is a brief overview of some of the changes that will be necessary and an explanation for why. The second presentation will be from the chief economist in the Department of Taxation. It's important to understand that in the Virginia system of checks and balances, our revenue forecasting process is done independently. No one in transportation determines the revenues. They are determined by independent third parties. And you'll be hearing from John Layman, who is the chief economist in that regard. The third presentation, Mr. Chairman, will be from you, and what is the future of the largest transportation agency, which is VDOT. I would say to the members of the board and to the other agency heads who are here that their chance will be coming over the next 2 weeks. No aspect of transportation, no agency, no service, no project will go untouched. The economic contraction that is affecting the entire country is dramatically affecting transportation revenues. Our agencies and our services and our programs must shrink accordingly. If I can figure this out. I think the slide explains it all. Change in transportation is necessary not because it's desirable, but because it is necessary. We just simply cannot continue to afford delivering the same level and kind of services that we have become accustomed to. And the reason for this is very simple. Our transportation revenue sources are directly linked to economic activity, whether it's a small business, whether it's family consumption, whether it's gasoline consumption, whether it's real estate transactions. All of those revenue generating activities have reduced rather substantially. Moreover, these changes are not cyclical in nature. We have become accustomed over the last 50 years when there is a recession to projecting when will we come out of it and when will our public revenue sources rebound. The reality is that gasoline consumption is down permanently. And we've seen dramatic evidence of this not only through the spikes in the gasoline price, which understandably reduced consumption, but even as the price pressures in gasoline have moderated, consumption has not risen. We are at a different place for our largest single source of revenue, which is the gasoline tax, and that is true at the federal and the state levels. Our second largest source of revenue is a sales tax on automobiles. And 3/4 of those sales taxes are levied on used cars. The bulk of the automobile fleet is light trucks and SUVs, and the value of these vehicles is anywhere between 1/3 to 1/2 of what they were just 18 months ago. These are changes that are deeply embedded in our economic system. They are not cyclical in nature, and so even when there is an economic rebound, we do not forecast, nor does the governor's economist forecast, a rebound in gasoline tax collections or even a significant rebound in automobile sales tax collections. This body remembers last June when you were asked to make $1.1 billion reductions in state revenues in the 6-year program. That was about a 40% reduction in the 6-year program for secondary and urban and primary highways. Those are your bread and butter local programs. So think about this. Last year, last June, you were asked to reduce the program by $1.1 billion or 40%. This year, in the same fiscal year, we're being asked to reduce the entire transportation program by $2.1 to $2.6 billion. Now, we've gotten very good at reducing costs, cutting projects, slimming down programs, but we have not confronted a change this systemic, this long-lasting. Let me break the problem out into two components. One is state and one is federal. John Layman will be discussing with you the individual details of the state revenue sources, but I've mentioned the two largest sources, the state tax on gasoline and the state sales tax on automobiles. Collectively, those, along with some smaller resources, will reduce over the next 6 years state transportation revenues by $1.5 billion. That estimate is an independent third-party estimate, not done by VDOT, not done by DRPT, not done by my office, but by professional economists in consultation with the automobile industry, the gasoline retailers, and the Governor's Advisory Board of Economists. We know what our universe looks like with respect to state transportation revenues with reductions of $1.5 billion over the next 6 years. The picture is far more complicated when it comes to federal revenues. Federal revenues, as you know, comprise about 60% of our transportation construction program, and they are far less predictable. Just last month, the U.S. Secretary of Transportation announced that the Federal Highway Trust Fund was insolvent, and there was no cash left in that trust fund to pay the bills for major projects. Those include major projects of any interstate widening, say on I-81 or I-64, or the completion of the Woodrow Wilson Bridge project in Northern Virginia. As a consequence, Congress passed a one-year, $9 billion bailout of the Federal Highway Trust Fund. It cost $9 billion in federal funds simply to maintain federal transportation funds at their current level. If Congress had failed to pass that, there would have been an instantaneous reduction to the Virginia program of about $270 million a year. We do not know, nor does anyone in Congress, if they will be able to continue that level of patchwork funding on an annual basis or not. And so one of the reasons you are seeing a range of funds there, the best case scenario in funding reduction is $2.1 billion over 6 years. The high end is $2.6 billion. And the question mark is, will Congress be able to muster the resources to maintain current spending levels on transportation infrastructure? And that has consequences you'll see, particularly in Commissioner Eckern's presentation, where transportation, which relies on dedicated, reliable, predictable funding sources, is increasingly reliant on unpredictable, unreliable, episodic funding. And we have to recast our organizations and our capital programs in order to manage those new streams of funding should they materialize. And while every transportation agency is going to be affected, some of it formula-driven, some of it not, approximately 85% of the cuts will be borne by the Virginia Department of Transportation. We'll be hearing a presentation by the commissioners on his blueprint for a sustained structural change within the Department of Transportation. Remember, the third largest highway system in the nation to achieve that. Commissioner Eckern has responded well. His leadership team has dealt with some hard choices and more to come. But it is clear, and the direction from the governor to achieve a sustainable six-year reduction in transportation services, projects, and programs requires us to ask the commissioner to reduce VDOT full-time employment by about 900 employees. Today, we are at 8,400, down to 7,500. There are even larger reductions in part-time and contractual employees to accompany that. In addition, the commissioner has been asked to develop a series of organizational changes that will reduce overhead, that will reduce the number of divisions within VDOT. In many parts of the Commonwealth, where the residency is the basic building block a VDOT organization. Those will need to be consolidated. It is no longer clear that each and every district will be able to support a full complement of construction and even some maintenance services. These will need to be consolidated and or regionalized. And as a consequence, the service levels that the people of the Commonwealth have become accustomed to will be reduced. We have asked, and the governor has asked, each and every agency to reduce service levels based on specific performance measures. In some instances, that will not be easy or perfect, but it will guide the decision-making within VDOT and for those service levels that are administered by the Commonwealth Transportation Board. Lastly, if we get through and successfully are able to reduce the size and scope of the Virginia Department of Transportation, if the Department of Rail and Public Transportation is able to achieve its economizing goals, and we are able to significantly reduce some discretionary service levels, the six-year program, and that is our list of construction projects across the entire Commonwealth, will be reduced by an additional $1.1 billion in projects. Now, that was 40% back in June when we took $1.1 billion out. I can't give you a hard percentage, but I have to imagine it's probably close to a 50 or 60% reduction in what remains of the six-year program. There are some other issues that we're going to be talking about, and those numbers could become worse depending upon the federal outlook, number one. Congress is contemplating, for example, an economic stimulus package. If that includes transportation, the numbers might be a little bit better. If they don't, or if there is no reauthorization, they could become substantially worse. A second issue has to do with state resources. And in 2007, the General Assembly authorized a $3 billion bond issuance to keep our major construction programs, in particular federal and matched local construction, afloat. The funds that support those bonds have been greatly diminished. We know for a fact today we will not be able to issue $3 billion in bonds, and substantially less than that, and over a longer period of time, if indeed bonds are issued. So many of the assumptions that drive our investments and our ability to match federal funds, our ability to match local funds through the revenue sharing project, our ability to match private funds through the rail enhancement program, all of those are going to be called into question and significantly challenged as you take up revisions to the six-year program. There's a spreadsheet, and I won't go into this in great detail, but you can see broken out by agency the magnitude of the cuts, the largest, of course, being VDOT. We've talked about that. In the coming weeks, Mr. Tucker will be presenting some proposals to bring the rail and public transportation expenditures into line with those revenue revisions. You can see the range of federal reductions. The best case scenario is we lose about $500 million, or excuse me, about $600 million to as much as $1 billion over 6 years. And those are major infrastructure projects, and the high end would have enormous implications for a number of projects across the Commonwealth. Our ports, the fastest growing port on the East Coast, will be losing about $17 million as they try to think about expanding Craney Island and other aspects of the port to accommodate the increasing flow of imports and hopefully exports as we try and rebuild our national economy. And lastly, aviation. A significant drop in the state funds, but keep in mind what they do with those state funds is to match very generous federal grants. And so the ability of the Department of Aviation to leverage funding for major economic development and growth initiatives around airports, whether it's warehousing, hangars, or replacement of runways, will be compromised. So you can see, again, the range of reductions over 6 years of $2.1 to $2.6 billion. This will be a challenge for the Commonwealth Transportation Board. I want to acknowledge, I believe most, if not all, of the district administrators from VDOT are here. so the members of the media understand these are the commissioner's frontline managers here who are dealing in a vastly diverse commonwealth who are going to be asked to live with these diminishing revenues and this changing organizational and funding situation. Every county, every city, every town will have reduced services, fewer projects, and arguably fewer opportunities as a consequence of this. Let me close out by saying what are the next steps. The first thing is that we will be working with our federal and legislative partners to figure out and get a better handle on the federal revenue estimate. Our hope and prayer is that the optimistic forecast will prevail on those federal revenues. But for those of you who monitor the daily bouncing ball of the Dow Jones Industrial Average, this is anybody's guess. We do have a clearly articulated and established set of policy goals, and this body has performed magnificently in identifying core services and facilities to protect and identifying those niceties which can be delayed or canceled. That task will again be upon us this year. I mentioned the issue with the insurance premium taxes. Those revenues support the $3 billion bonds and a host of very, very critical projects and programs. That may wind up being among the most important deliberations of this body. When will this occur? It is our hope to have at least a conceptual six-year program revision in place at your November meeting and discussions during December. There will need to be public hearings around the state because of the enormous consequences of this. We will take that information and act on it, hopefully at the January meeting of the Commonwealth Transportation Board. So to my colleagues on the board of on the Commonwealth Transportation Board and to the district administrators, our first task is to manage expectations. And ours is a smaller, less predictable, and potentially smaller world with fewer economic opportunities as a consequence of diminishing transportation revenues. I think one of the things that is so illustrative is the two rail industrial access grants you heard presentations on. Those are small $300,000 grants. They bring 12 and 40 jobs respectively. What happens when that $300,000 is not there for that prospect into a community that is struggling with very high unemployment rates? That's the reality that we're facing and one that we will address, but it is a very challenging reality. Before I turn it over to John Lehman and his presentation, I'd like to ask if there are any questions.
That's it. Thank you, Secretary. McCarthy.
Just one clarifying for me, Mr. Secretary. This chart, the six-year funding reductions to the transportation agencies, the 2.1 to 2.6 bottom line, that's over and above the $1.1 billion that we did in June.
Mr. Chairman, the that is over and above. So if you added $1.1 billion to the 2.1, which adds up to, what, $3.3 billion, that's how much, that's the best case scenario that we would have been taking $3.3 billion out of the six-year program since June. Obviously, the upper end is even more damaging.
Other questions? Ms. Connelly.
And again, this is when we're performing at a very high level of our own time and on budget. And we are having to reduce at least, we'll be down to almost 50% of what we, and our needs obviously are increasing at a substantial rate. This is almost mind-boggling. You as the secretary, this is a very, very difficult time. I guess that's more comment than question.
Mr. Sterling.
Mr. Secretary, you certainly paint a very bleak picture, but it's one we've all known has been coming for the last several months as we've watched everything that's taken place. Everything that I've seen, and you mentioned the $8 billion infusion that Congress made this past year because of the shortfall, everything I've seen, whether it's out of Congress or even by the two various presidential campaigns, seems to be short-term oriented. I haven't seen a real effort at looking at a long-term problem. And what we see here is largely the result of long-term issues where the revenue streams are becoming more and more unreliable. Fuel tax is just, as cars become more efficient, people are traveling less, as fuel gets higher. Have we seen, have I missed something? Have we seen anything where there's an actual federal effort at diversifying theirs through the new authorization, which I'm hearing rumors will be delayed? It won't go into place next year, but we may see another one-year stopgap. Are we seeing anything that looks at giving us long-term relief or long-term predictability? Because we've got to put together a six-year plan, and it's hard to do that on these sort of short-term stopgap measures.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Sterling's question is a very appropriate one, particularly given his background for what, over a decade on Capitol Hill, so you understand that process very well, and your former boss is the number two on Environment and Public Works when the last transportation bill was enacted. The short answer is no. And we are in a period of such economic uncertainty that no one can answer a question on a day-to-day basis about the security of the financial system of the U.S., much less a vastly smaller program of transportation. We are a tenth of the size of the economic bailout. Most folks would say that economic package was not large enough to meet the need. The harsh reality is, until those issues get resolved, the major macroeconomic issues to the satisfaction of Congress, that it is unlikely that the federal government will have the wherewithal and the focus to solve the infrastructure and mobility needs of the entire United States. And so, in my guess, and we all know things can change very dramatically, but I think most people are guessing that this is an issue that will not be resolved in the coming year, as you indicated.
Is there anything that we can do collectively with the other states to sort of push that along? Granted, we've got to get the larger financial and macroeconomic picture resolved. That has to take place. Hopefully it'll be sooner rather than later. But it would be nice to know, or it would be helpful, if there is a plan, a program, something being pushed leading into once that's done for Congress to then act on. If they're not going to move forward and take that leadership, I don't know if it's us together through the National Governors Association, if it's collection through AASHTO or some of the other organizations out there, but it just strikes me that the last thing we can do, even if we can't get the revenues or we can't get this problem fixed today or even in the short term, I think we need to start laying the groundwork so that if it's 2 years from now or whatever the case may be, that we put together something that we think is logical and rational looking out into the future. I mean, it's the problems of today are based on short-term solutions, and again, we've got to be looking long-term if we're going to get outside of this cycle.
Mr. Chairman, I would respond to that by saying, first and foremost, that you and Mr. Tucker chair very important reauthorization committees for our two principal bodies, APTA, which is the American Public Transportation Association, and AASHTO, which is the Association of State Highway and Transportation Officials. The governor participated just yesterday in a conference call with Governor Rendell from Pennsylvania, focusing on the importance of thinking about energy and transportation as a coherent whole. And if there's one area where I do think there is some consensus and hope, it is that in dealing with the energy issues, that at least some aspects of transportation can be addressed. We know, for example, from some of the projects we've dealt with here, with the investments in rail and public transportation, and I have to say this, in land use, if we can make those things work, there are some smart investments that save money, say energy, and conceivably could be part of a package of solutions. That begs the larger question, and I'm delighted to see Mr. Dickens here. I know he followed very closely, and Mr. Witt, the discussions yesterday on the Jordan Bridge. You think about where this Commonwealth is. The South Branch of the Elizabeth River is really the heart of the first economy of the Commonwealth. And the facilities that are in there today, whether it's the Norfolk Naval Air Station, the shipyards, the commercial entities that are serviced by that oldest commercial body of water in the Commonwealth, with all apologies to Williamsburg and Jamestown. That's where the heart of the Virginia economy was born, and there are four bridges across that river. On November the 8th, the Jordan Bridge, which is one of the principal crossings, will close because it is deteriorated and unsafe. In February, when we begin replacing the Gilmerton Bridge, which is another bridge crossing there, the existing structure there will be closed. We will lose 50% of the bridge crossings in that corridor. Mr. Dickens is familiar with the closing and the demolition of the King's Highway Bridge in Suffolk. I would venture to say that every member of this board has had some type of a partial closure of a bridge, whether it's the Norris Bridge over the Northern Neck or some of the tunnels that were closed in southwestern Virginia due to deficiency in the fire control systems, that we face enormous infrastructure costs simply to maintain and replace what we already have. And so while it may be possible, Mr. Chairman, to imagine a strategy where certain energy-related and positive and good investments can be made, the underlying strength of our basic infrastructure, whether it's rail, whether it's highway, whether it's transit, whether it's ports, whether it's airports, is the ability to maintain and operate them safely. And those funding needs, I don't see any consideration of in the short term and perhaps not in the long term. Mr. Chairman, I appreciate your patience. I know you want to introduce Mr. John Lehman. I would, by way in preface to your introduction to him, just emphasize the importance of the Virginia revenue estimating process. For state revenues, there is an official forecast, and it is developed independently by the Department of Taxation in consultation with academic and business economists and affected industries. So in the case of transportation, direct consultation with the automobile industry, as well as the real estate industry, we have a number of sources that are tied directly to that, and an understanding of the general consumer behavior, because we still get a half penny of sales tax in the transportation budget. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. I really appreciate the professional and outstanding way in which you delivered some very bad news. Our next speaker is John Lehman, Chief Economist of the Department of Taxation. As you recall, we had the privilege of hearing his presentation or a briefing from him in September, and I'm hoping that he's bringing us better news, but I doubt it. Mr. Lehman, it's a pleasure to have you back. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me. Once again, good news. Today, what I'm going to go over is slightly different than what was presented to you in September. In September, I brought forward to you Highway Maintenance Operating Fund Outlook that was based on it. Kind of standard scenario for the outlook in motor fuel sales and car sales. The process that we go through, as the Secretary mentioned, there was also another alternative outlook that was under development at the time I met with you in mid-September. Right after I met with you, we met with the Governor's Advisory Council on Revenue Estimate. And after hearing a standard two-quarter recession outlook and a three-quarter alternative outlook, they selected half the members for a three-quarter outlook, primarily due to the consumers, the auto, and energy outlooks. And half of them selected the standard two-quarter recession. What that means for the Commonwealth Transportation Fund is most of the numbers I showed you are now going to be precipitously lower than they were in September because of a three-quarter recession. And the three-quarter recession is defined as it started in July 1st and is going to go through March next year. So as you can see on this slide, the alternative low growth or three-quarter recession called for a deeper housing recession, much higher energy prices, and deteriorating conditions in the financial markets, which as we see today has already given back another 600 points. Also, oil has now fallen below $75 a barrel. In less than a year, it's doubled and now gone back in half. Who knows where that's going. What's the outlook for Virginia in the economic slowdown projected in a three-quarter recession would be for employment declines similar to the 2001 and 1991 recessions, where we lost about 1% of our employment base. Currently, through September, we're at about 0.5 positive job growth in the Commonwealth. So we anticipate employment is the last thing to go in a recession, and we believe that over the next 6 months, employment growth will slide. Mainly in the construction and financial activities, about 12% of the Virginia economy. Private business services in the service sector still are very good in the Commonwealth, along the Crescent from Northern Virginia to Hampton Roads and in Richmond, with educational and health services still providing solid job gains. One of the things that's most disheartening, not only for the general fund forecast, but also how it reflects the ability of the consumers to shop and fund your 0.5 cent on the transportation trust fund for retail sales, is that our outlook for personal income and wages and salaries is more than 0.5% lower than was in the two-quarter recession outlook. So it's only about 3% increases over the next 2 years. On this slide, I'm going to just briefly go over where the collections were for the first quarter of the year. They provide us a benchmark with what should we expect here in the short term for fiscal year 09. And as you can see, motor fuels taxes, the forecast for a 5% decline is only down 1.5%. However, there's some noise in the data due to the way that they remit the motor fuels. Underlying growth is really closer to about 4.5% right now. Next, motor vehicle sales tax collections. One of the interesting things is that they've already fallen 12.7%. That was the forecast. They've also now fallen 15.7%. This is one of the, I'll show a graph on this, this is one of the steepest declines in the history of motor vehicle sales tax. The other large source I'd like to concentrate is on the retail sales tax. You see that through the first quarter, we have actual losses in retail sales. The general fund is experiencing the same component, loss of sales, as consumers have more money that they have to spend on food and energy, and there's less discretionary spending. Similar to the 2001 recession, look at motor fuel tax collections over the forecast horizon. The official forecast that was adopted in January, as you can see, anticipated a small rebound in motor fuel tax collections driven not only by diesel but also regular gasoline. One of the things that this forecast shows is that the higher prices is really dampening the outlook in this source. And when I say the October forecast, this is really the October alternative three-quarter recession. So that shows how we're keeping in mind with what the Governor's Advisory Council on Revenues recommended, that we take the more conservative approach. Next, let's just talk about regular retail gasoline prices. This is the history as monitored by the Energy Information Administration for the lower mid-Atlantic states. And as you can see on this price, it's over 65% since 2 years ago. Granted, even since when this was the last official forecast, it's up by about 27%. And it's showing it's about $3.65. That's the blended average. You have problems in other states right now. I know recently, this last data point was as October 6th. I mean, there's many places in Virginia now that you can buy gas for under $3 a gallon. The forecast going forward is using this information on a blended mid-Atlantic region continues to expect about $3 to $3.50 a gallon. As the Secretary alluded to, car sales are not doing good at all in the Commonwealth. This graph is plotting the history and the forecast from motor vehicle sales tax collections all the way to fiscal year 10. And as you can see on this graph, these levels are now approaching 1998 and 1999 for the actual dollar collections. This represents from the official forecast a 20% reduction in absolute dollars. And what we're seeing right now that are out in the market is new car sales are down about 16%, but the prices are only down about 4%. What's really hitting us is the used car market, where we're seeing 9% declines in volume and 9% declines in price in prices right now for used vehicles. Next on this page is total vehicle sales in fiscal year 09. They're expected to be down 310,000 from the peak in fiscal year 2004. That means that the outlook for the auto sales for fiscal year 09 is the same as it was in fiscal year 2004, except there will be no new car sales. That's how severe the contraction is.
Could you repeat that?
In fiscal year 2000, if you take a look at the level of car sales, of new and used car sales in 2004, and you equate them to what we're going to sell, or we anticipate selling in Virginia in 2009, the amount of reduction is the number of new cars that were actually sold in 2004. So the forecast for fiscal year 2009 is the used car market of 2004. Tremendous. We had a tremendous run up in incentives from dealers, creative financing mechanisms that spurred a lot of new car sales in the 2001 to 2006 period. Next, on page 7, what I'd like to summarize for you is the six-year revenue outlook. As you can see, that over the next 6 years, the total reduction is about $1.5 to $1.8 million as compared to the official forecast. I draw your eyes to motor fuels tax collection, significant reduction across the board. I'm going to have a graph next to put it in percentage terms, but let's just take care of the dollars. As you realize, this is 36% or so of the revenues associated with the Commonwealth Transportation Fund. Next, the other 23% from motor vehicle sales tax, followed by the 0.5-cent retail sales outlook. So here's about 82% of the Commonwealth Transportation Fund and the six-year plan. These three sources account for about 80%. This is very much in lockstep with the fall forecasting process that we go through, where we have the Board of Economists meet that then give us scenarios, and then we develop revenue estimates. As you can see down at the bottom of the page, there's the reductions for the total Commonwealth Transportation Fund by year, a little over $200 million to $295 a year. What I'd like to point out on the last slide is the growth rates and how we have performed. Motor fuel sales tax, some people might look at this and see the out-year forecast that we actually have positive increases in motor fuel taxes. Well, to put it in perspective, last year, motor fuel sales tax adjusted for the diesel equalization rate fell about 4%, and we're projected to fall another 5.2% this year. So it does not look like we're going to get back to the volume of fuel sales in the Commonwealth until late in the six-year plan. And that's subject to change as more fuel efficiency vehicles are sold. How will the retooling at GM, at Chrysler, and Ford go? So those out years, that's pretty far down, but for right now, it's fair to say that, you know, motor fuels have peaked, and you're on a path of declining consumption. Next is the motor vehicle sales tax. You were very much in conditions similar to the 91 recession and the 2001 recession. You know, they fell, motor vehicle sales tax revenues fell 9% last year. They're projected to fall 13% this year. That's almost, it's over 20% off in a two-year period. And actually, it's more condensed into about an 18-month period, with very little comeback because of the three-quarter recession that's anticipated in the outlook. And finally, the retail sales outlook. Retail sales, flat this year. The saving grace of the transportation trust funds is to some people. I tried to forecast it. And it does include food, which is about 13% of retail sales, and it's somewhat a stabilizer from a forecasting standpoint. It provides some stability because food is essential. As you can see, it's not until fiscal year 11 that you have over a 4% increase in retail sales. Retail sales forecast right now for fiscal year 9 and 10 at below 3%. Considering where inflation is running along at 3.5% to 4%, this, in real terms, purchasing power is going down. And finally, you can see at the bottom, in fiscal year 08, the Commonwealth Transportation Fund in total adjusted for the diesel equalization rates, you know, they fell by about 1.2%. Now this forecast of 0.6%, if you exclude the new revenue sources, which are the one-third of the prior year's insurance premiums tax, which the first $100 million was just deposited this month, and about $4 million a month you get from the state recordation tax, the actual forecast growth rate would be about minus 6.7% in fiscal year 09, one of the largest declines ever. Where you see the priority transportation fund up there on the previous slide, that reduction in between the yellow lines, the priority transportation fund, that is the insurance premiums forecast driving that. The PTF is comprised of $20 million of motor fuel taxes, and then the insurance premiums. And the general fund forecast released by the governor last week had a reduction in the outlook of insurance premiums. In summary, where are we going forward? Well, later this month, actually in early November, we'll continue the fall forecasting process as we assess collections not only in the general fund but the non-general fund and see if these trends deteriorate or get better. We most likely will be meeting with the Board of Economists again along with the Governor's Advisory Council on revenue estimates sometime before the release of the final forecast in late December. We have a very the October Global Insight National Economic Forecast for October happens to correlate very strongly with the forecast I presented to you today for the August standard three-quarter recession. And I direct you all, if you'd like more information, on the Secretary of Finance's website on the right side is a link to a 64-page document that in detail goes over the national and state economies and also on Section 4, non-general funding.
Thank you so much, Mr. Lehman. Are there questions of Mr. Lehman? You've stunned them into silence, Mr. Lehman.
It's happening a lot lately.
You bring the science part. I suppose it's your other academic colleagues that bring the dismal part. We really appreciate your good humor and your keen professional insights into this process. It's been enormously helpful to us. I do have a question, though. You indicated that these low growth forecasts are predicated on a three-quarter recession. Arguably, you wouldn't know that until after Christmas, where you can sort of tally up, was there any sort of consumer push? Would it be fair to say that springtime will be the juncture when we would have to look if we have to reduce yet again these revenues? Is that the transportation revenues are relatively set in terms of the revenue forecast? We'll be beginning a reprogramming process next month for that. But what if the recession is longer than projected? I guess is the simple way to pose the question.
Well, considering that there's beginning to be a consensus out there that the nation slipped into recession sometime in July, this past quarter that just ended, that would be a very long downturn, something that has not been experienced since the 80s, especially in the Commonwealth. Next March and April are critical months, not only for your transportation revenues, but also the general fund. The thing about transportation is that how have the consumers reacted? Where are they going to be taking any future stimulus checks? Will they be putting it into new car sales, car repair, maintenance? Also, the tax filing season itself begins to start. And traditionally, recessions either end or begin sometimes in the spring arena after the holiday shopping season. So, yes, I think it's a fair assessment to say that we ourselves will assess the forecast not only here in late November and December, but we traditionally do a mid-session economic outlook in January, late January, early February, when the General Assembly is in session, and we'll be glad at that time to reassess your revenues too.
We welcome that opportunity, we think. The last few visits haven't been quite so promising. But again, on behalf of the Governor and the Commonwealth Transportation Board, thank you so much for your professional insights and expert judgment. Okay, the third and final workshop presentation is from Commissioner Eckhorn, and the Commissioner, along with every other agency of state government, has been asked to
create a response to the declining economy. And I think it is abundantly clear, based on the previous two presentations, that we are dealing with a long-term situation. And the commissioner has been tasked by the governor to come up with a long-term solution to a long-term problem. Welcome, Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As a matter of course, I'd also like to acknowledge my district administrators in the audience, as well as my six section chiefs, my deputy commissioner. They are here because of the criticality of this task as we approach it from a business standpoint. I'd also like to acknowledge in the audience several of our industry partners who are with us in responding to this economic downturn, and my sister agency, Commissioner D.B. Smith with DMV. I'm going to give you a perspective on a response to this downturn from a business standpoint, the reality of what VDOT is about. But I want to put it in historical context for you as we start. VDOT today is a significantly different agency than it was at the close of the 20th century. You've all been a part of that. In the last 8 years, this agency has implemented and responded to over 950 audit findings and study recommendations. It has become a smaller agency, down from 10,500 to today's strength at 8,500, while managing and serving a larger system and customer base. It has implemented sound new business practices and approaches and is redefining its relationship with the private sector. All of this to become more transparent, accountable, and to use resources wisely. These steps have been recognized nationally through rankings as a transportation agency and through numerous awards. In 2005, we began the next steps on that journey. In 2006, I consolidated area headquarters to 248 locations within the Commonwealth. We reduced our sign shop operation from 7 locations to 1. Last week, I had the privilege of dedicating and being at the dedication of the McConnell Operations Center, one of the operation centers that we will use across the Commonwealth. These steps are examples that set in place what people have asked me a lot about in terms of the future of VDOT and what VDOT will be as an agency. This is what I use to bring that into business terms. We will be focused on a mission of maintenance, operations, and emergency response. We will deal with the reality of scale services, looking at a network that connects the Commonwealth and gives first priority to that network, and which will serve approximately 85% of all our users as a first priority and where the majority of our crashes and incidents occur. As a business, we will be integrated and streamlined partnerships that does not replicate every function and service throughout VDOT's organization. We will be driven by rapid deployment of research, technology, and training to ensure that we provide you the best and consistent practices and services. And we'll recognize that construction funding will be focused at safety, reconstruction, and bridge replacements. And as the Secretary has indicated, that major new construction will become episodic. Our agency will be smaller, providing its services differently and proportioned differently across our business. That's the vision. The economic times have accelerated that process. This takes the chart that the Secretary used a little bit earlier and gives you the breakout for VDOT as an agency, VDOT's portion of the $1.5 billion that the Secretary mentioned. What you see is our state fund revenues over the six-year period being reduced by $1.382 billion, or almost $1.4 billion. Our federal funds revenue estimates range on the optimistic side from a decrease of $588 million to, in a worst-case scenario, about $1.1 billion. The totals are staggering as you look at them, between $1.9 and $2.4 billion are the economic challenge that my department faces. I've been in this business almost 40 years, and I can tell you that this is not a temporary downturn, and I am not approaching it as a temporary downturn. I do not recall in my tenure facing this kind of an economic change, fundamental structural change in the way we have to do our business anywhere else in my experience in two other states and working for a national association. Why is this a big deal? It's a big deal because as you look at the state funds downturn, state funds drive the majority of our services provided and the operations and staffing of the department, while federal funds predominantly drive our projects that are delivered to customers. What are we going to do about it? In mid-September, I assembled a team that I personally led to develop a blueprint for moving forward. This is what it's come to be called, a blueprint for our next steps. We developed that plan to address the demands of this year at $227 million and for the long term, and recognizing that the recovery will not reach the level that we have enjoyed prior to 2004. It has three parts to that strategy or to that blueprint. One dealing with organization and staffing, one dealing with our services and program changes, and the third, which we're all familiar with, which are the CTB program changes. This blueprint is a blueprint and an outline. It sets the parameters within which my agency will need to operate over the coming years. It is driven by a set of priorities that are familiar to this board and to many people in my department. First, to maintain our emergency response capability is a driving force. Second, prioritizing our services from the center line of the roadway to the edges. Third, to recognize preservation and repairing of the system before expanding. Fourth, to maximize our use of federal aid. We are also moving to reshape the agency to maintain and ensure that we have core competencies throughout our business. We are eliminating and consolidating redundant functions. We obviously are focusing at finishing projects underway. Planning for new construction will become episodic as a driving principle, and adjusting our project mix to reflect the priorities of this board. Let me talk about the organization and streamlining and bring it to a business sense or a business practice for you. As I said earlier, over the last 10 years, VDOT has gotten smaller. As a result, we needed to reshape a lot of the way we've been doing things. But the reality has been that we have been trying to maintain all services and all operations, just doing them a little bit smaller and a little bit less. We've also had a lot of studies that have given us recommendations on where we need to head next.
We haven't capitalized on all those studies. But now we have that opportunity. What you will see in an organizational structure as a guidepost moving forward, as the Secretary has indicated, is a shift from our residency-based service center concept to more consolidated basis, to more focus around our district operations. Our residencies, as we have used them in the past, will change their purpose, their form, their function, their location, and staffing. I anticipate that we will reduce our current fleet of residency locations by 30% as a part of this structural change. Our central office also will be affected by this blueprint. I anticipate that we will reduce our division count from its current size by 30%. That will bring us down, and if I bring that to measures, today we have about 45 residencies. That reduction will bring us down into the 30 to 35 range. Central office, we have about 31 divisions. That means we'll have about 20. We have about 82 equipment repair facilities across the Commonwealth. Some are one-bay shops, some are three-bay shops. Those will be consolidated, and I anticipate we will reduce that fleet to about 35 to 40 locations and change the style in which we respond to our staff and equipment repair. Our transportation operations centers, which are going to change both, which provide traffic engineering services. They take care of signals, our signal systems, and our technology will be tasked to take on an additional function, and that will be to serve as computer-aided dispatch centers, call centers, and will be our operational point that will occur where customer complaints will be handled on a 24/7 basis, 365 days a year. That's a significant consolidation. We will also be able to consolidate, because we have a synergy here in the Richmond area, from 6 to 5 locations. We also are introducing into the agency a concept that has started with the regionalization of our traffic operations centers, in which we will expand throughout the organization. I call it a shared services common to the agency. Service centers for things like payroll processing, human resource transactions, those kinds of things that today we try to do in 10 locations, we can probably provide within 4 to 5 locations to serve the agency. In our core functions also, we will look at design centers, materials testing consolidations, and we are already progressing on a consolidation and a regionalization of our right-of-way functions. We also, as a part of our organization, will streamline the layers of supervision that we have. In some locations, it can be as many as 5 and 6 layers of supervisors to senior management. That we will achieve a goal of 3 layers of supervision. The second part of that first leg of the stool, dealing with now the size and staffing of VDOT, really relates to the questions that the Secretary started to lay out. Pay increases, obviously, per the Governor's direction and as established last week, have been delayed from November of 2008 until July of 2009. I have already implemented an elimination of vacancies within the agency. That will be about 1,800 vacancies that will go unfilled in the agency. That's broken down here on this slide between classified employees and our wage and temporary employees. We have established target levels for the agency of classified staff of 7,500. That's down from our current approximate 8,400 classified staff. Our wage and temporary employees will reduce from approximately 1,200 today to 500. Our senior management team across the department will probably be reduced by about 20%. And our target here at central office will focus around about 1,000 employees from our current 1,300. We have begun immediately to manage these staffing directions. And we will manage them as we have tried to do in the past with respect and openness to our employees. We have first eliminated the vacancies. We have implemented a critical hiring process and hiring freeze so that each and every position that becomes vacant is reviewed and either authorized or denied. We currently have almost 1,500 people eligible for retirement. And over the next 5 years, I anticipate another 1,000 employees to be eligible to reach eligibility for retirement. We will take advantage of that as we manage our transition. We also experience today about a 6-8% turnover rate annually in our workforce. And that will help deal with this change in our workforce makeup. We will approach this element of, because it is so critical to the VDOT professional, we will approach this element of the blueprint with our employees in mind. We are already communicating openly with them. We will provide options, and where we can, we will clearly explain what their options are for each employee that is affected, or each position that is affected. The second leg of the stool deals with the customer impact and what the customer will feel. I've classified that for you in three broad areas. First, our service levels and contract spending. Today, we spend about 70% of our operating budgets through contracted services. I've already put in place a process in which all our service contracts are being reviewed for either delay, renegotiation, or cancellation. We'll also be looking at our maintenance contracts along the same lines. We have instructed our districts and central office divisions to submit by Friday of this week their plans around what to do with these contracts, where they are, how much money they have left in them. We're working hard as we speak to achieve that $227 million of savings. And this is the first place that we can look in those contracts. We are also embarking on a process to evaluate the services provided by the department to ensure consistency throughout the Commonwealth. Such things as snow and ice levels of service, roadside maintenance standards, and signing, striping, and roadway lighting are all being reviewed. This key element of our program is keyed around customers. As we review and consider changes, we have made a commitment that when we are considering those changes and and considering whether to move forward or not, we will include opportunity for public input and notice before any decisions are made. We have also looked at such items as, and I've got them illustrated here, around ferry services, rest areas, and other activities that could be subject to this kind of a program. Obviously, all the evaluations that we're making will be based around the key performance measures and metrics to ensure that those critical services are sustained. I've also instituted an immediate reduction in our major infrastructure failure reserve. It's a hard word, set of words to get out. But today, to buffer, and so that we ensure that we have a reserve, we hold about $47 million annually in the department. We are reducing that by 20%. We still have a reserve so that the public emergencies are protected. But that safety net is a little bit wider today. We will also initiate an evaluation of our interagency transfer payments. As we move forward, there are two or three examples of that around the locality maintenance payments, which account for currently about $300 to $400 million of our annual operating budget. We have transfers, and we are working with VITA and Northrop Grumman to make sure that our contracts are as tight and efficient as we can make them. And I have opened a discussion with Commissioner D.B. Smith about considering how to best address the $14 million annual transfer I make to DMV for them to provide services around our weigh scales and our permitting operations. That will probably result in some new unique opportunities that, as we complete that discussion, we will bring before the Secretary and the Board for review. The third leg of the stool is, in fact, the CTB program changes. The Secretary has opened that dialogue and given you the magnitude what that's about. We will direct that and develop it through the six-year program update process as a part of the CTB. You can anticipate, obviously, reductions from formula and designated distributions anticipated. You will see increased proposals for federal funds to maintenance projects. We may recommend and open for discussion reduction or elimination of some smaller programs. Obviously, we're on schedule to do this during the months of November and December. This is the net rollout of what I have laid out for you in the blueprint that we are operating with. What you'll see in this chart, and what I want to highlight, is that this has been an across-the-board direction. We have focused a part of the blueprint at organization and staffing, a part at our services and programs, and a part in the CTB. The net total reduction over the six-year period appears to be in between the estimates that you've seen of 1.9 to 2.4. So if we're on the optimistic side, we have some room. If the forecast becomes worse, we will have to look deeper. How are we moving forward? We're moving forward as I laid out to my staff yesterday and to the employees today to detail and implement the blueprint at the same time. I have established seven teams within the department to advance the elements of the blueprint. Finance team chaired by my Chief Deputy Commissioner Greg Worley. The CTV program update team is chaired by my Chief Financial Officer, Rita Buescher, We have a communications team so that we are clear and concise with our communications to employees, external audiences, and with the CCB. That's chaired by Jeff, led by Jeff Caldwell. I actually have three teams working on staffing and organization. We have a district and field team led by Garrett Moore, who is the chief of or the lead for our district administrators. I personally am leading the central office team. And we have a business services team, which is chaired by Connie Sorrell, to implement the service center concepts that you saw me lay out earlier in the presentation. And we have a people transitions and options team led by my chief of organizational development, Meredith Baker. Last week, I also initiated discussions with the industry. I'd like to acknowledge Jeff Southard in the room today. VTCA very quickly gathered a group together so that we could have a conversation and discussion to generate ideas on how to stretch our dollars. They already have brought forward a couple of ideas that I think are worth investigating to get a 20% stretch from the dollars that we have, but it will impact our customers. It will impact our customers because we will have to change some of the practices that we have had in contract construction. There's I left a place in here because no plan is perfect, and some parts of the plan may in fact require legislative authority, both at the federal and the state level. As examples, at the federal level, commercialization of rest areas as a way to sustain a rest area program within the Commonwealth will be absolutely essential. Today, I'm not allowed to do that on the interstate system. We also will be approaching Congress about simplification of program spending categories. AASHTO and the states have firmly committed to reducing the 108 federal categories for spending to no more than 8 in future authorizations. Those are two examples of what we may need to deal with. Lastly, we will implement a system of regular reporting to ensure that the governor, the General Assembly, you, our employees, and our customers are informed about what is happening and are engaged where we are, where it is appropriate in the decision making that needs to go on. Here's the bottom line. I told you what I was going to tell you. I told you. Here's what I'm telling you. VDOT will be a smaller agency with a different look. That's been in the cards for a long time. This is accelerating that process. Safety will remain a first priority across the Commonwealth. Services throughout the Commonwealth will be affected and reduced. The probability is that the conditions of the system will not be as good as they are today. My final thoughts on where I'm headed and where we're taking the agency is captured in this slide. The blueprint will change as we move forward. We are on a simultaneous path of implementation and detailing the plan as we move forward. Implementation can take no longer than 24 months. No function or service is off the table at this point. And we have implemented a process in the department that builds on our success of a strong business model approach to making decisions and engaging our people. My last kind of remark for this afternoon follows along these lines. These are times that are real and challenging. The changes are not going to be without pain. They won't be taken lightly by either us for our customers. In the meantime, we know that, while we are developing and finalizing the blueprint, our dedicated and hardworking employees and professionals will continue to keep Virginia moving. I have no doubt about that. And at the end of the day, we're going to make some additional hard decisions. 2 years ago, when I came here and received the privilege of being appointed as your commissioner and the privilege of joining my staff of professionals and dedicated employees, I did not have any idea that this was the challenge that we were going to face. But at the end of the day, I can't think of a place that I would rather be or with a group that I would rather work with to address this challenge. And at the end of the day, remind the Commonwealth of Virginia and the Virginians we serve that we will still be here 2 years from now. We will touch their lives every day. And they can be assured that we put their safety first. And that's a real testament to the people behind me who make this happen every day. Mr. Chairman, I'll stand for questions.
Thank you, Commissioner. Questions for Commissioner Eckhorn, Mr. Bowie.
Not a question, but a comment. I commend the commissioner and his staff for doing what I consider a marvelous job, a very painful job, to come up with this kind of solution. And out of all of this, probably will end up being a leaner, meaner organization with efficiencies and bottom line savings. But I think you've done a great job. It's a terrible shame to lose some of the services we'll have to lose. But I think you're doing the best you could with what you have to work with, and I commend you.
Thank you, Mr. Bowie. Mr. McCarthy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Commissioner, thank you for a sobering presentation. If I might ask, are we going to have an update on this next month in terms of how it's starting to fall out?
Yes, sir.
Okay, because in June, one of the most useful graphs was this one I showed you earlier today that shows how the $227 million, well, that's on top of the $218 million that was reduced in June, correct? So this is $227 more for next year's VDOT budget. And
this
so,
year, this year's
I'm sorry, this year's budget. Thank you. So this chart will be updated to reflect that. Well, that'll be a sober picture to see, but if you could maybe put that in a little context, too, and sort of show us. I mean, I looked, we had this conversation the other day, part of it anyway, and I said, you know, when I joined the board in July of 2002, the plan that was adopted that year was for something like $10.4 billion, six-year plan. And here we are six-plus years later, and it's actually much smaller. It'll be a $6 billion plan if we're lucky. And that doesn't count the enormous inflation that's occurred in construction since. That's just straight dollars. That's an amazing statistic to me. So it would help me, anyway, to have a little context for this chart to show where we were the last whatever you can conveniently pull together, and then projecting it forward for, say, up to 5 years as well. That will really paint the picture as starkly as I can imagine doing it.
Appreciate the suggestion. You're right on target. Thank you.
Mr. Martin.
Mr. Chairman, as you talk about performance metrics, I'm very gratified. And I'm going to caution that with a situation of this magnitude, the danger is always there for people to underestimate the value of performance metrics. And I would ask you if at all possible to find some way to ensure that as we go along and any member of the CPB or any legislator later should ask you that you could explain in just one or two sentences how the performance metric is validly measuring the cause and effect that you need to have measured and reliably predicting the outcome of your decisions?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. That's an easy question to answer because when I came to VDOT, I found that to be one of its strongest assets is they had embraced and were working with a performance management approach to their business. So we'll be glad to do that.
Mr. Dayton.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Commissioner, I listened to your comments about the number of retirees that we presently have. In the Wilder administration, there was an incentive program that was marketed to encourage retirees to retire early. Are there any funds available for a similar program to be offered to retirees in this program?
Oh, there will be no incentives offered that I'm aware of at this point.
Mr. Dean.
I think that's important. The word is that if there is a reduction, that may be an opportunity, and I think that communication initiative that you outlined, that's something that's important so they understand the parameters of what it is we're doing. Mr. Commissioner, if I could, one other thing that obviously, this is a very significant step. It is something that I think is going to create an adjustment, especially for folks who have come to expect a high level of service. Has an effort been made at this point by you and perhaps by the Secretary to educate the legislators who will be dealing with this come January?
Commissioner, if I may, we've had a couple of conference calls. Obviously, we spoke with the legislative leadership yesterday and today. So the leadership of the General Assembly is well aware of this. They are still absorbing the shock of the general fund reductions. And what they see of transportation is that on a percentage basis, the reductions are far more profound in transportation than in the general fund, and the general fund reductions are shocking. This is going to be very much, and I appreciate the commissioners laying out a methodical. This is a 18 to a 24-month process to get there. In some sense, we are blessed in transportation that we do have the flexibility to get there humanely. That's not true of certain general fund services where they have a finite two-year budget. So in that respect, I think the commissioner is to be credited to creating a plan that relies on attrition and transfers as opposed to more drastic personnel actions. As you know, though, there are 140 members of the General Assembly, and in this day and age, the leadership is a small percentage of that. Our work is cut out for us. One of the things that we encountered the last three sessions of the General Assembly is just there has been such turnover, and the composition of the committees are such that there are very few legislators who even understand the basic mechanics of the system as it was envisioned even two or three years ago. And so one of the challenges we face, probably less so with localities than we do with the General Assembly, is to educate those newer members about how transportation works and why it's so important. And I think simple examples like the closing of the Jordan and the Gilmerton bridges or the economic development prospects that the rail or the Highway Industrial Access Fund bring to a high unemployment community, or the congestion that occurs every day with people trying to get seats on Metro Rail or trying to get just even onto I-95 to get to their jobs in the morning. I would welcome and encourage each member of this body to talk to legislators that they have a relationship with and just bring them up to speed on how the system works and how profoundly it has changed. I think for the senior members of this board, we're right at about a $10 billion six-year program. I believe we're down to about $7.9 billion now, and then with another at least $1.1 billion. So you're right, Mr. McCarthy. I mean, we're in the sixes. It's been a 40% reduction in a very short period of time. That does not take into account the diminished buying power of those dollars, which is very, very serious in the transportation arena. So thank you for asking that question. Ms. Connolly, and then we'll come to the side.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Eric, if you could expand on page slide 12, you said the probability is system conditions will not be as good as they are today. Are you referring narrowly to just pavements and this type of condition, or are you also talking about the equipment and our signalization programs and our congestion mitigation? What exactly do you?
Everything is on the table, and I cannot predict where you'll feel the pain. Could it be in signals? It clearly will be in pavements, because we've already felt that in terms of increased costs, declining revenues since 2004, not being able to accomplish as much surface treatment as we have in the past. But we will monitor and try to set our priorities as we go forward. But I cannot hide the fact that the system is going to be affected. And where, I can't predict. It might be in rest areas. It will be in pavements.
Thank you. So it's a broad definition. Our whole system will be in less good shape. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Keene.
Mr. Commissioner, it's obvious you've done a great deal of work, and you are to be commended about with that. It's unfortunate you have to use all your leadership skills here to reduce instead of moving forward positively. And as we, and as you use the blueprint to move forward and to change the structure, I would ask that you be sensitive to those areas of policies and procedures that we develop, that they don't, while they're neutral on their intent and they're neutral in their nature, that they don't have an adverse impact on certain segments of our state, in particular the rural areas, which could have an adverse impact in a policy that was really intended to be neutral and had all neutral aspects. But that can happen. And certainly, as we develop those priorities, that they really can give priority service, obviously, to the service of the 85% that's using it most. But make sure that we don't abandon the others. It's not an abandonment. You're in creating orphans that's a concern for those of us in the rural area as we develop the policies and procedures. And so I would request that, because we struggle out there as well. And I know what you're going through. But we're sensitive to that, and know that you will do a good job as you lay out that plan.
Mr. Chairman, if I might respond, I want to be very clear. Our first and most important priority is to ensure that the Commonwealth stays connected and that its customers and users of the system are safe. And I don't care where they are, whether they're in southwestern, northeastern, southeast. A customer to me is important no matter where they live. So our first goal is to maintain that connection.
Mr. Witt.
Mr. Commissioner, I want to commend you on your work, but I do have a recommendation for you as you modify and finalize your blueprint. Mr. Lehman was before you a minute ago, and he said that the new estimates are based upon a three-quarter recession. We haven't seen anything greater than that since the 1980s. But in the last 3 to 4 weeks, we have seen things in the economy, in the capital markets, and in government reaction different than we have seen in most of our lifetimes. And I think what you need to do is a shock analysis of saying, as you're analyzing what to cut, what happens if we're back in April and it's another $1.1 billion that we have to do? As you pare down organizations, it's easy to go across the board and have everyone take 10% here and 10% there, diminishing the capacity of everything so that nothing does anything well. I'm suggesting you look at it and say, what if worst case happens? What if it is $1.1 billion less than that within the next year? At that point, what would you be eliminating, and take that into account as you do this structuring right now? It may alter certain decisions that we make.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Witt, I really appreciate that comment because it gives me the opportunity to clarify that as we have approached this blueprint, across-the-board kinds of cuts is what we've done in the past. We're not doing that this time. We're starting to say, recognizing the realities of the next 10 to 15 years, what should VDOT look like and where should it be using private sector, public sector, and that's what I've charged my teams to do, is to think about our business from that perspective. And I really appreciate you emphasizing that.
If you had to take another $1.1 billion cut, would everything that's in place today, even with your cuts, still be in place?
Right. I would appreciate that.
Ms. Carter.
I want to commend you, Commissioner. Thank you, Mr. our Chairman. And I want to commend you. You did an excellent job. As I sit here and listen, I thought so much about on time and on budget, how that you brought that together. And we were striving to do that, and we did it. And thanks to your leadership. And as you just stated a few minutes ago, I don't believe that I've heard any better speech than what you made. And you were sincere in everything you said, and I appreciate that. And especially for the citizens of the Commonwealth. And you stated this a few minutes ago, that the Commonwealth would stay connected and safe. And I personally, you know, the governor makes an excellent speech, but our commissioner also made an excellent speech. And as Mr. Davis said a few minutes ago, to educate our legislators, also our citizens need to be educated. And I certainly would prefer and would like very much, and I'm going to ask as I go back into my locality, if there's a time that we can have the commissioner to come before the board, which is televised, and that he can present to our citizens what he has presented today. Education is so important. And when you talk about the service center and 24/7, because there are many of us here and also in VDOT that we're going to get calls that we've never gotten before, regardless of how much of a shortfall we have, everyone still expects the same service. And with that, just impossible that we cannot do that. And so having a service center is certainly going to help each of us. It's going to help the board of supervisors to relate people and to direct people to a service center that can give them more answers and service than what we in locality. So I really appreciate that service center.
Thank you very much.
Connecting with the public is so important. They are citizens of the Commonwealth. And so I'm certainly going to ask that question if you would and if you will and if you can, Mr. Secretary, for the Commissioner and you to come in and so that our Commonwealth citizens can be educated. This is what we need. And you, in VDOT, you're doing an excellent job. And I want to say your staff is doing an excellent job. You've already got them thinking, and they really are doing marvelous. I had the opportunity to go over some issues yesterday, but it was good.
Before or after I briefed it.
About that. But it was good, and they are really doing an excellent job, and I do appreciate that.
Thank you
so much, and thank you, Mr. Secretary.
Thank you. Mr. Dickens?
Pretty brief items. One, I would take my colleague from Fredericksburg's suggestion a step further and maybe even suggest there be a 30-minute presentation made that can be provided to all localities across the state if you think that's an appropriate thing to do. The question I have is that we're talking about some significant reductions here, and we've talked many times in the past about the construction budget essentially being rated to feed the maintenance budget. You may not characterize it that way, but that's kind of the way I look at it.
It's called the maintenance deficit.
Yes, okay. What have we recalculated to see what that crossover time frame is? If we haven't, I would strongly encourage we do as quickly as possible.
That's a great question. We are still adjusting to the revenue numbers, and I would suspect by the time we have a draft six-year program, we'll be able to articulate what the size and the scope of that maintenance deficit is. It's important, though, to understand that some of the services that the commissioner is talking about reducing are funded through the maintenance budget. So some of the examples of rest areas, of mowing, of the roadside standards, the signs, the striping, all of those things are components of the maintenance budget. So when he says we will be reducing levels of service, some of those services are funded through the maintenance budget. So there certainly will be a larger number of maintenance deficit, but it's important to note that there will also be offsetting service reductions, and if the same service levels were maintained, the deficit would be even larger.
Mr. Chairman?
One final question. Suggestion is this is so depressing. I see we have some branch water on the table. When are we passing out the bourbon?
6 o'clock. Any other questions or comments on this side? Mr. McCarthy?
I just wanted to say, Mr. Chairman, it's not as if we're not sober enough after this, but if I understood the commissioner correctly, what I heard him say was that it's going to be a smaller, more focused organization that we're overseeing here, but it will be I think the word you used was episodic to describe any new construction, and I think that gets at the question Dana asked and at the chart that I referred to, because we are maintenance first. State. I don't think any of us really wants to be a maintenance-only state, but in order to avoid that, somebody's going to have to look at the other side of the picture, too, because we're talking about what we're able to do living within our means, and that means real-world consequences, and we've gotten an overview of what those real-world consequences are today. And if all else stays the same, the costs continue to go up, and the revenues continue to go down, this program comes from 10 plus billion 6 years ago to 6 plus billion now, and it's heading straight in that direction unless somebody decides to make a decision to change direction.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. Okay, any other questions or comments from the board? Thank you, Commissioner, for an outstanding presentation, and again, I appreciate your recognition of your district administrators and your senior staff. I would say on behalf of the board, our deep appreciation. We know the day job doesn't stop, and you've been asked to deal with many of these very challenging questions, which are very personal. But the challenges we face as a commonwealth, and we are a commonwealth, are no different than the private businesses, the nonprofit organizations are all going through this right now. This is an unbelievable period of change in the American economy. And what we have to do is to adapt to that new environment, and we will adapt successfully. So thank you so much for those efforts. Before we move on, I did want to acknowledge two people. I'd like to ask first Matt Tucker, the director of the Department of Rail and Public Transportation, has not had the heavy involvement, and again, because of the scale of the impact on the Department of Rail and Public Transportation, but I'd like to ask Mr. Tucker to make some comments, generally speaking, about rail and public transportation. Then secondly, after Matt, and this will give DB a little bit of time to think about what he's going to say because we've not rehearsed this, but I do want to introduce, after Matt has spoken, the DMV commissioner and ask him if he would like to make some statements on behalf of DMV and his employees as well. Welcome, Mr. Tucker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Listening to Commissioner Eckern speak, it really points out when you think about DRPT and VDOT, and try to compare the business models, and which you probably will be hearing from me in future months in terms of how we deal with the downturn in the economy and loss of revenues, is that we have fundamentally different business models. When you think about DRPT, we don't operate, we don't maintain, and we don't construct. But a lot of what we do is public benefits, focus really on partnerships between either public entities or private entities. So when you really look at what are the impacts are going to be to our programs, we have to look at it not only from the perspective of what DRPT is able to do, but also what is happening to our local and private partners. And so from a consideration point of view, there are quite a few different dynamics that we need to address about how our side of the equation impacts our partners, but also understanding of what are the fundamentals of our partners and what's happening to them as a result of this economic downturn. I think the last time we spoke, we provided for you all our monthly ridership update, and I talked about it in the context of public transportation, that we are in the best and the worst of times. What I'd call your attention to before I talk about the budget is, if you look at some of the key factors, when I talked to you the last time about July ridership, I said that it increased 11% citywide. If you look at what happened for the month of August, it had increased 3%. If you look at what has happened fiscal year to date, it is up 7%. And 94% of the increase in transit ridership across the state of Virginia occurred in our most congested area in the Commonwealth of Virginia, Northern Virginia. If you put that into context of what we're facing for transit, that we're in the best of times in terms of seeing people shift to public transportation, but we're now starting to face some of the worst times because we're dealing with some of the same issues that we're discussing from an economic point of view as individual citizens. If you look, you'll see that the fuel prices compared from 1 year to the next year, month over month, was up 36%. That has a bottom line impact to transit. We get more riders, but our cost of operating goes up as well. The overall cost of operating or operating any business is strained, and you can see from our transit perspective that that places a greater emphasis on local commitment, increases in customer revenue, and of course state revenue. As I listened to the comments by the secretary and by the commissioner, you know, I started thinking about our partners in terms of how they react. When you really step back and think about it from a transit, from a public transportation point of view, when you don't have money, you only really have two options. You either cut service or you raise fares or you do a combination of the both. At the end of the day, we would like to see from a policy point of view trying to raise fares to continue to give people the opportunity to take public transportation, but that's going to be a balance in that. When you consider from what the secretary identified in his presentation on the six-year plan, that our revenues would be down about $110 million. And really, what does that mean from the 2008 six-year improvement plan? For the mass transit fund, that means a 7.4% reduction for FY 2009, the current fiscal year that we're in now, an 8.9% reduction in fiscal year 2010. For our rail enhancement fund, it means about a 6.4% decrease in 2009, and in 2010, about an 8.5% decrease. For our recordation taxes, if you recall that as part of HB 3202, significant new funds were added for the core of transit, and that's funding for operations. And while we were happy to receive it, what we've seen is the projection was here, and the reality has been here. For fiscal year 2009, we're looking at about an 18% reduction from what was approved in the six-year improvement plan. For fiscal year 10, about a 35% reduction. Those are very, very significant, and we have to consider that within the framework of what our local governments and regional governments are experiencing, that they're going to have some of the same challenges that we're facing with the need to identify additional sources of funds. From our rail program point of view, it really means that as we look at moving forward with the public-private partnerships that we've done, that we're going to have to make some tough decisions. It's going to be less revenue. And what I'd call your attention to is really two key pieces of information, and then I'll sum it up because I think it's key. On our transit program, we were funding a significant part of our capital programs through bonds. And that whole ability to fund it, it's about $60 million in annual funds, is now being called into question about our ability to be able to do that kind of program. That will have a significant and major impact on our program if we are not able to utilize bond funds to meet our capital needs. From the basics of state of good repair, of replacing a bus when it needs to be replaced, to delivering on new projects, that's going to be a real strain. You also have to keep in mind that bond money was provided for our rail program, about $13 million on an annual basis. And again, the same issue is going to be that if that funding is not available, it's going to significantly impact our ability. And it's going to be some real, real tough choices that I think are going to be rather draconian if there is no identifiable source of funds to cover those programs. So for us, over the next 30 days or so, as we come back to you all, we're going to be reaching out to our partners and talking to local governments, to our private sector partners as it relates to rail programs, to really get an understanding of where we are and to talk about what are the choices that we really going to need to make. And with a clear understanding that whatever we choose to do, that we're going to have to, it's not going to be business as usual, that the priorities are going to be really basic on, basically focused on keeping the core system up and running, replacing those buses, and living up to our previous commitments. But make no doubt about it, from a public transportation point of view, what we're facing is really real, because if you think about it, so many people have started turning towards public transportation, and we're getting the outcome that we wanted to see with increasing use of public transportation. But we're probably going to be faced with turning those folks away, because we won't have the money to operate the level of service that we have today.
Thank you, Mr. Tucker. Questions? Okay, thank you. Our next and final speaker, many of you don't know D.B. Smith. Welcome, Commissioner Smith, who runs the Department of Motor Vehicles. D.B., you don't see, it's kind of interesting to me, the funding reduction that was put together by John Layman mentions the four transportation agencies of VDOT, DRPT, Ports and Airports. And you may wonder, well, why isn't DMV on that list? The reason is that DMV is the collector of most of the transportation revenues that support VDOT and DRPT and the other transportation agencies. So in addition to ensuring the safety and the security of the driver licensing process and the individuals that are on the road, the revenues on which all of us are dependent are dependent on the good offices of Mr. Smith and his excellent staff at the Department of Motor Vehicles. And I hate to put you on the spot like this, DV, but, you know, there are such profound changes, and undoubtedly they're going to affect DMV, and I just wanted to know if you want to take an opportunity to address the board in that regard.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. I would, and I appreciate the opportunity, and I'll be very, very brief, because I know your time is short. The Department of Motor Vehicles, like VDOT, rail and public transportation, we have been cinching up our belts for some time now. For example, in fiscal year 07, we had about 1,900 employees. We're down to just over 1,800 employees. We are trying to do our best to collect the revenue that the Secretary talked about through alternative means. One of the things that we're trying to do is, you may have seen a mention of a law that we called SB 116, became law July 1, which forced a lot of our business into other channels for collection. That is, you can no longer renew a vehicle registration in one of our customer service centers without paying a $5 fee. Your alternative to that $5 fee is to use the internet, use the mail, use the telephone, or use some of our franchise operations. We call them DMV Select. So we're trying to move some of that business out of our customer service centers. Our revenues, like VDOT's, are projected lower. I mean, we live off vehicle registrations, for example, one big revenue source. If vehicle sales go down, people aren't registering vehicles, and they're not paying titling taxes on vehicles and those types of things. So we're seeing that same type of problem. Ours is the same problem as VDOT, only at a smaller scale. We're a much smaller agency, so we're facing about an $8 to $10 million problem that we've got to deal with in our budget right now. Notwithstanding this, these problems, notwithstanding the decrease in revenues and in our increased costs, I just got, Mr. Secretary, I just got notified yesterday that our aluminum costs are going up $165,000 per year for license plates, so we've got to deal with those types of things. What scares me, what keeps me up at night are the challenges like the Real ID Act, which we'll hear a lot more about over the next couple of years. It's a federal law that's going to put about 250,000 more people into our customer service centers each year. The other thing that keeps me up at night, notwithstanding the reductions that we've taken and are taking, the potential for fraud. We do collect $2 billion of revenue a year. Our control systems are not the best, and we've got to spend a lot of money making sure that the money gets collected. One of the things that we're investing in right now is a new computer system, which we will go as far as our resources allow us to go to completing that that computer system, but that gives us a much better ability to combat things like fraud and improve services to our customers. So again, in summation, our main challenge is to keep whatever money is flowing to VDOT flowing to VDOT. And we'll do it with reduced people if we must. We're certainly at a smaller agency right now, recognizing that our revenues are diminishing. And like VDOT and our brethren in the transportation agencies, we'll do the best we can with what we got.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Smith. Any questions from the board?
Just
Mr.
a quick
McCarthy.
Comment. I renewed my vehicle registration last week online. It took about a minute. There were three steps, and they said it would take 4 or 5 weeks to get it, and I got it yesterday. So that's pretty impressive.
On time and on budget, eh?
Currently, you're my favorite customer right now, so I appreciate that.
Write that down.
I'll be back in 2 years.
Okay, this does conclude our work session agenda. Let me do two things logistically. First, for those members of the media, there will be a media availability in just a few minutes at 4:30 in the third floor conference room of VDOT. There should be somebody there to hold the door open so that you can proceed through there easily. That's in the big, tall main VDOT headquarters building, the same floor as the commissioner's office. There will be other media outlets calling in on speakerphone, so we'll try and manage that as best we can. The commissioner will be there. Mr. Tucker, you're welcome to join us. I suspect much of the interest will be with the commissioner, but I hope that you can join us. Deputy Secretary Reese and Mr. Donahue will be there along with the VDOT Public Affairs staff. Secondly, dinner tonight is at 6 p.m. at 21 North 17th Street. A facility that fortunately was done when there were abilities to make transportation investments. We will get a tour of the Main Street Station here in downtown Richmond, as well as a pedestrian walkway, which is linked to some downtown revival. And while there are only two trains a day serving Richmond, we know that Mr. Tucker, with magical abilities, will be able to increase the train access into downtown Richmond and other parts of the Commonwealth, notwithstanding the revenue shortfalls that we're dealing with. So we'll see you all at 6 p.m., and thank you so much, everybody, for coming by. For the media, availability starts at 4:30. Thank you. The meeting is adjourned.